Hi, this is Steve Chandler, part of the Wealth Warrior Movement. This program is called Shifting Your Mind to Wealth. Let's begin here. Let's begin with the human brain. Pretend you're a robotic device. You're a marvelous device. You were created to be able to do many, many things. You can dance, you can sing, you can write poetry, you can play instruments, you can make love, you can create babies, you can do all these amazing things, run marathons, and you have unlimited potential. And everything is run by your brain. And the brain inside this system is a biological computer up there really running the show, really sending the messages out to the body that decide what the body does, the actions the body will take. If you can see it that way, then it's a good place to start. Here's the problem with most people who come to me wanting to make more money. And it was the problem with me too. So no one comes to me wanting to make more money who doesn't have some problem that I had. That's the beauty of it. It's something I can relate to immediately. There's some place at which they are stuck on the developmental path, the journey to be fully, creatively human, self-expressing, using their strengths and using their talents. They're stuck somewhere. And it's usually a collection of beliefs that are inappropriate to reality that keep them stuck. Usually brought over from childhood, usually brought along from childhood fears. And the beliefs are there, and then the behavioral habits are a way of countering these fears that the person has. So it's beautiful to hear what a person is stuck on, because that's where we'll do our work. But to really have someone become wealthy and know that they can produce and create wealth at will, that's where I want to get them. But to have them get there, there has to be a fundamental understanding of the brain first, and then of mind, their own mind. And we're going to go on to that on track two. But let's start with the brain. If people don't have this understanding, then all their pursuit of wealth is either fear-based or survival-based or greed-based. It becomes shallow, and the next thing you see is they've invested with Bernie Madoff because they can get a higher return, and now they've lost all their money. And their relationship to money and wealth is very shallow, and it's either fear-based or greed-based, which is really the same thing in different clothing. And that never sustains, that never adds to a person's happiness, that never really feeds a person's well-being and sense of efficacy and the inner strength that I have, where I know for sure, no matter what, I can create a livelihood for myself and a good one. Now, that's where we want people to be, because that's where wealth gets created on a daily basis. It's not from finding the latest multi-level group or lucking in to some hedge fund or anything that people believe about money. None of that is sustainable or real or authentic. Now, let's take the word authentic as a starter. Authentic is a very important word. People are always telling you they want to be more authentic, and they go through whole programs to learn to be authentic. They invest a lot of money to get a guru and spiritual advisors so they can learn to be more authentic. But what does authentic really mean? I mean, it's really true that people who are more authentic make money faster and produce wealth, inspire confidence, create relationships faster. People love to be with authentic, real people who are really being real. But what does it really mean? A lot of people have a kind of cold, steely, surgical impression of the word authentic. It's like, don't lie so much, or come on, tell the truth, or get real, or be vulnerable. Things that feel like I can only get it wrong. And that's not really it. It's better than that. It's more fun than that. Because the root word, where the word authentic comes from, is the same root, A-U-T-H, where the word author comes from. And this really helps us understand how the brain works, is to see this word author. A lot of the work I do as a coach is with writers and authors. I coach writers, I coach authors, and what I coach them to do is to write a book that people will really want to read instead of just some kind of vanity thing that they can use as a calling card and, wow, you have a book. Well, I'm gonna put it on my night table. I'll have to try to remember to read it. I want the author that I coach to write a book that's really compelling, riveting, and magnetic and changes a person's life and makes a difference. The kind of book that when you read it, you buy a bunch of copies for other people. That's how books become bestsellers. I've had a few bestsellers in my life. I mean, you would think after 30 books that you'd have a few. And I have a few bestsellers, let's say six at least, that are technically bestsellers, which is to say they've sold over 50,000 units in the United States. This is not counting overseas or any other kinds of sales. So bestsellers are written when they're authentic, when they have inspiration, when the reader can feel the heart of the author in certain places. Now, I'm not saying that I do that all the time or I get it right every time or I really succeed at that always. I don't. I fail quite a bit at that. But by failing, I've learned a lot about it, and so I work with other authors. Now, here's the thing about being an author. Some of you might be thinking right now, well, I'm not an author, so maybe I can tune out and daydream until he gets to the point. We are all authors. We are authors of our lives, whether we know it or not, or whether we're willing to accept it or not. Shakespeare said, and Shakespeare was a great author, as everyone concedes, the whole world is a stage and you must play a part. Now, most people just go that far. They play their part on the world's stage. And they play it based on imitating other people who have played a similar part. But really what's there for us is not just to be a player on the stage, but to be the author of the play. And that's really exciting. And that's where wealth comes from. But you have to understand your brain to be a good writer and also to have the kind of life that gets you the financial security and the standard of living that you're willing to take full responsibility for and to create and produce for yourself. So author means you're the author of your life and that you're going to create. Now here's the thing about the brain that's so important to understand. Biologically, the brain has two halves. And I'll oversimplify this. The left side of the brain is linear, detail-oriented, very organized, critical. It's your editor. It's the thing that kicks out sales pitches. It is a very judgmental side of the brain, very necessary to life. The right side of the brain, on the other hand, is full of visions and inspirations. That's where humor comes from. That's where creativity comes from, and that's where inspired writing or inspired thinking about how to make money, that's where it comes from. The right side of your brain, not the left. And you'll hear people say all the time, I get my best ideas in the shower, or I went to a writing workshop, or I went to a brainstorming session and we really came out with great ideas. Well, that's all because the right side of the brain has been given a chance to express itself. For most people in our society, the right side of the brain is suppressed and repressed during the day, during the workday. The workday is run by survival and fear. And so the left side of the brain takes over, judging, analyzing, choosing, and really making decision after decision after decision, evaluating, judging, criticizing, being skeptical, being cynical. That's a left brain function. And most people function from that part of the brain all day long. And that does not lead to great wealth. It leads to survival financially at best. So if a person is going to become really wealthy, they have to become an artist. They have to become creative. There's no way around it. And, I mean, there are some get-rich-quick ways where people luck into some kind of stock and then sell it or something. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about creating wealth in a reliable way, no matter what the circumstance is, no matter what the economy is. That's what we're talking about. And to do that, you need a really good understanding of how your brain works. You can't skip that part, because if you have this understanding, then this little computer inside your system is yours. It's yours to program and use. Otherwise, it'll use you. It will run you from the left side of the brain with a lot of fear as its guideline. So the question now becomes, if I really understand the function of the right side of the brain, and I really want to open it up as much as possible during the day, then what can I do to do that? That's vital. That's extremely important. And we're going to look at some methods for that. But first, just notice, when does it happen by itself? That's a clue to what you can do to open the right side of the brain. And by the way, companies that are associated with multiples of billions of dollars, like Google, like Apple, and then back in the olden days, people who made millions of dollars through their inventive minds, like Henry Ford, Thomas Edison, and people like that, they all worked with the right side of the brain. They all understood the way it worked. If you read Think and Grow Rich and all those cult-like, kind of creepy in some way, books from the 1940s and the 1930s, they're all talking about tuning in to things like infinite intelligence and the white light and things. They didn't know how to describe it. They were really talking about the right side of the brain. That's where great ideas come from. So when you read that at places like Apple or Google, the employees take at least one day off to go play inside a play lab, and they're just fooling around and playing and having fun, making up games and things like that, that's really an understanding of the right side of the brain. They want people to free up and get loose and play, because great ideas come from that. Notice when you take a shower, you get a great idea. I have a friend who took a long vacation recently, worried that while on vacation she wasn't going to be making money, but came back with all kinds of wonderful ideas for her business that just propelled her business forward. So what's going on now? What's going on is we're giving the right brain permission. We're giving the right brain an opening to express itself. I have a friend who's a creative writer and a comedian, and he calls it driving for ideas. And what he does is he gets in his car and drives all around randomly. He drives around Tucson, drives into the desert, and has a little notepad on the seat next to him. And what he's really doing with his brain is he's allowing the left side of the brain to be occupied driving the car. It's like giving a kid something to do so the kid won't bother you. So he's giving the left side of the brain something to do, like driving the car. Now the right side of the brain is free to come through with idea, idea, idea. The same is true if you go for a long walk. A lot of writers call it walking for ideas. They take a little notepad, they go for a long walk, and what occurs on a walk is the whole brain has to function as a whole brain because of the walking process forces the right and left side of the body to work in harmony, which frees the brain up to do the same thing. And there are many things like that. Once you understand the brain, and you understand that your right brain is going to be the one that makes you the money, then you want to look for ways throughout your day to free it up. One way for a writer is to just get into writing. Just get into the flow and say, I'm going to write for 90 minutes or I'm going to write for an hour. No matter what I write, even if I write the words blah, 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 I'm going to fill 20 pages with writing. And let the writing go wherever it goes. Now, what that does is it tells the left brain that you can't stop this process. Your editorial capacity is not needed right now. We don't need you to judge what we're doing. and you can relax, you can do other things. Actually, what I want you to do, left brain, is to move my right hand so I can write and darken the page. That's all we're doing, is darkening the page. Now the left brain says, oh, okay. And now the right brain can come through and put the inspired things down on paper. This happens for a writer. This happens for you in life when you're creating ways to make money. Okay, so that's just a real basic, simplistic way of looking at how the brain works. I highly recommend Shift Your Mind, Shift the World as a way to probe deeper into this subject. Because right now, we're going to talk about the mind. And we're going to talk about shifting the mind to wealth. Where was it before it was shifted to wealth? Well, wealth is really a combination of service and creativity. Serving other people and being really creative. That's where wealth comes from, always. So that's where I want my mind to shift to whenever it gets stuck down low, somewhere in a low mood. So now we're talking about the mind, thought, belief, and mood. We've moved on from the purely biological left brain, right brain, which is so vital, but it's also vital to understand the role of thought and the role of mood in my productivity. Because as everybody can testify, being in a low mood, being in a bad mood, being depressed, being down, I don't do my best work. I don't feel like connecting with customers and clients or coming up with a new way of serving people at all. I don't feel like that. I just feel like getting through the day. I'm just going to try to make it through the day given how I feel about life today. We all experience that. I get emails constantly from people who are really discouraged. I won't say clinically depressed, but I will say terminally discouraged about themselves, about life. And when I have people that I coach and I can sense that they're down on themselves and they don't have a good feeling about who they are or what their capacity is to make money or have a good profession, then I want to work with what are the thoughts that are creating that feeling for you. Because these feelings, these bad moods you put yourself in, this down feeling, this sense of gloom, this sense of discouragement, these feelings are not going to help you make money. It's not going to work for you to come from this place. And all it will do is be like a negative feedback loop that makes itself true. So all these negative beliefs you're believing about how hard it is with the childhood you've had, or how hard it is with the lack of education you've had, or how hard it is with how few people you know, or how hard it is where you're living, all these things that you believe make it hard for you to make money, these put you in a bad mood. These put you down, and these take you out of your creativity. These have you feeling low. And these bad moods are not good places to make money from. I know when I work with entire sales teams, when I work with a whole team of salespeople, that the ones who are upbeat, and I can see the light in their eyes as they go out into the world to make their calls, these are the people who are going to come back with sales. These people are in such good moods that people love meeting with them, and they're in a good mood about their product. They're in a good mood about helping someone, and they sell really quickly. And a lot of people call them natural salespeople or good, but really what it is that somehow they've put together a set of beliefs that are positive and uplifting and hopeful and possibility related. And because they believe those beliefs as they go out into the world, the mood is high, and from a high mood, a good mood, more sales happen, more money is made, always. So I want to look at what are the thoughts, what is the role of thought in my mind? And the first thing I really want to see, clearly, no going back, really seeing it, just like you can see that there is no monster under the bed, or just like you can see that every night the sun's going to go down. I get that. I'm no longer disappointed when it becomes nighttime. When I'm a little tiny child, I think, does it always have to get nighttime? Can't it ever be day all the time? And I finally accept, no. Nighttime comes every single day. There are certain things that when I can really see that this is how the world works, this is what reality is, it gives me such freedom. Now, the thing about the mind that I want all my clients to see and that when I finally saw changed my life forever is that all feelings, anything I feel like, oh no, or anger or anything, is caused not by an outside circumstance, but by what I think about it. Because if I understand the role of thought in how I feel and what I choose to do, then I've got new freedom I never had before. Now, most people don't. Most people believe that they feel the way they do because of circumstance or other people. That's why they're feeling down. And I say, why the long face? You look a little gloomy. What's going on with you? They're not going to say, well, I'm believing certain thoughts right now that are making me feel this way. They don't say that. They tell me about an outside circumstance. And they want me to see that whatever that outside circumstance is, people are no longer buying 8-track tapes anymore, and I've got a whole warehouse full of them. That's why I feel down. They want me to think that the outside circumstance is what it is that makes them feel bad. Now, here's the problem with believing that that's how the brain works. The brain does not work that way, and the mind doesn't work that way. There is nothing inside your biological system that allows a circumstance or an email or another person to make you feel anything. Nothing outside of you has a direct line to your feelings, direct access to it. Your feelings are always produced by the thought you are believing. And those thoughts are yours. Let me give you a quick example of how that would lead to making money if you finally got that. So it's an old story, you've heard it before, but think of it now in the realm of believing thoughts. Two salespeople go to a distant country, a distant third world country, and these are salespeople who sell shoes. One salesperson calls home and says, bad news, really bad news. Nobody here wears shoes. The other salesperson calls home to the main office and says, you better have a lot of product ready for me. I've got news that's so good it's off the charts. Nobody here has shoes yet. So now look, the circumstance is identical. People are walking around without shoes. Salesman number one says, that's bad news. I'll never sell any shoes. People don't wear shoes. Now, those are thoughts. Those are just thoughts. But what he's telling everybody, including himself, is that his bad mood, his depression, his horrible discouragement is caused by all these people walking around without shoes on. Now, if you believe life itself causes you to feel what you feel, what's going to happen is you're going to consistently try to change life, change reality. You'll get another job, you'll sell something else, you'll get out of sales, you'll do this. You're always trying to change the outside so that you finally feel good. And here's the problem. It never works because feelings don't come from there anyway. So that's why you get the phenomenon of, hey, I reached my goal, I got the job I wanted, and I'm as miserable as I've ever been. I don't know what's wrong with me. I thought this was what I wanted. I thought this woman was what I wanted. I thought this was what, I thought this car, I thought having a second home was what we wanted. And we're as miserable as we were when we had a little tiny house. And here's the confusion, is that people are asking outside elements and circumstances to change so that their feelings will change because they're under the illusion that their feelings are being caused by the outside circumstance, that there's a direct causation. There is not. There is no relevance whatsoever, as a matter of fact. I mean, there's an association that we associate with cause and effect, but it is not cause and effect. So one person goes to the window and sees the rain, and that person says, oh no, what a gloomy day, bad weather, this is not good, why do I have to live here? I'm going to move to Arizona. And that person's in a bad mood now, goes back to her desk and is in a bad mood, gloomy, gets an email from a potential customer and just gives kind of a flat, boring answer, and that customer doesn't buy. Notice how your mood affects your money, but only all day, every time. Now the second person goes to the window, she opens the curtain, and she says, oh, thank goodness I've been blessed. Refreshing, beautiful, rejuvenating rain. I love it. I hope it continues all night. I might not have to play the recording next to my bed of rain and thunder sounds that I love to listen to go to sleep to. Now, this second woman is seeing the same rain, exactly the same rain, as the first woman sees. So look here, the circumstance is identical, but person A is descending into a really bad mood, and person B is ascending, lifting up, rising up into a beautiful mood. Now, it's funny, maybe both people believe the circumstance is producing the mood, but you and I can see that it's not true, that person A has a belief that rain is bad and gloomy and depressing and not to be desired. That's what they believe. That's their thought. Person B has a belief the rain is wonderful, rejuvenating, excellent. And person B is now in a good mood. I had a friend who emailed me a couple years ago when the recession was at its worst. Now, I don't even know that for sure, because who knows, it could get worse. But let's just say when it was at its worst. And he said, this recession is the best thing that ever happened to this country. Now we're falling back on our true strengths and resources. Now we can't borrow money so easily. Now we have to develop our skills and find out how to serve the global marketplace. He was excited. He was thrilled. Other people I work with, they're gloomy, downtrodden, disheartened. By what? The recession. Oh, the economy is awful. We're waiting it out over here. Now, it's not the recession. It's the thought about it. So it's not what it is. It's what you think it is that causes your feelings. And if you know that, you can work with it. Because you can take any circumstance and you can say, okay, this doesn't look so good at first glance. I'm going to start challenging my thought that this is bad news, and I'm going to work with what's good about this, and I'm going to start to look at what could be good about this. And a lot of salespeople I know make sales happen because someone said, no, we can't do it because of this. And instead of getting all disheartened and discouraged and depressed and rejected, they would say, well, tell me more about that. Because when people tell you why it can't work, they're really telling you how it could work. Salespeople who welcome rejections as interesting information and a possible window to a sale are salespeople who really succeed in a big way. By the way, this isn't just about salespeople. We're all salespeople. We all sell something. If we're going to make money, we have to. The mind is very important to understand. Thought is everything. And feelings have so much to do with success. Happy people sell more, and we are all salespeople. Happiness comes from thought. It doesn't come from anything else. Circumstance is meaningless until you give the circumstance meaning. When I work with you to help you make more money, I will not talk about anything, any scam, any scheme, any strategy, any tactic for making money until you get this deep down in your soul about mind and about brain. This is what operates you. This is what runs you. This is your creative centerpiece. Your imagination was put there to create. And if you're using it instead to make yourself feel bad all day, how can you make money? How can you really break through and be a creative person who produces wealth everywhere you go? I promise you, you can't. Many years ago, I was devastated by my addiction to alcohol and drugs and was just recovering and trying to make a life and really didn't know how to live or what to do. And it was a pretty desperate situation, but at least I was no longer drunk or addicted or any of that. And clarity started coming in to my life, and I started to see the possibilities. The problem for me was I had no guideline. I grew up in a home where there was a lot of trouble. My father was always gone. I had two alcoholic parents. My mother was always either drunk or strung out on pills when I was growing up. So I never really learned a role model or saw an example of work or how to achieve or anything like that. I'm not saying I had a bad childhood. Actually, I had a wonderful opportunity to play sports and read books and really explore creatively. So I'm not a victim, but I did come out of drunkenness and addiction with no sense of how to be a grown-up or how to create a livelihood for myself. I had no clue. I had no idea, and I didn't think I could do it. So I began to, fortunately, be given some books. The book that really changed it all for me was a book called The Master Key to Riches that was given to me by a close friend who could see that I was very confused and didn't know what to do. And I read that book, and all of a sudden, life came alive for me as far as how to be a grown-up, how to create wealth, how to really be a professional and have a livelihood. And that book changed my life. You know, it's funny that people say, you'll never find it in books. It's not in books, it's out there in life. Well, my life has been the opposite of that, and so have so many people who've talked to me. Yes, you do find it in books. It is right there, what you need to know. And I found it in that book. Well, one thing led to another, and pretty soon I was reading other books, and people would recommend books, or else the author of one book would say that he or she was influenced so much by another book, and then I'd go get that other book. And finally, I discovered Nathaniel Brandon. And Nathaniel Brandon's books were another eye-opener for me. They really took me to another level. They were all about self-esteem. And his central premise was that self-esteem is destiny, that your self-esteem will determine your success out in the world. And if your self-esteem is low, if you don't think much of yourself, and you don't think you're very capable of anything, that's usually what will occur based on that level of self-esteem. Again, it goes back to what we said earlier on this program about the role of thought and the role of what you believe. So I began to read those books, and I was really impressed, and they really changed my life. And I did a lot of his exercises in the books, and the exercises opened my mind more and more. And finally, I found out where he lived, and I did a few phone sessions with him. He's a psychologist, a brilliant one. And I went out to Beverly Hills, and I met with him and did sessions at his house. I was so impressed with him, and it's not like I'm saying that I wasn't really needing psychotherapy. I really was. I mean, it was like a godsend. But here's what he taught me that was so powerful that I've known ever since. That this is all about consciousness. And whenever I bring more consciousness to something, not only does my self-esteem grow, but my ability to work with whatever that thing is improves. So if I'd have a problem, I'd bring it to my session with Nathaniel, and he would say, all right, I'm going to use my sentence completion technique with you to expand your consciousness. Are you ready? And I said, well, sure, I love this. And he said, okay, here's the sentence STEM. Now, let's say my problem at the time was calling people I didn't know. That was what I thought was a problem. He'd say, okay, now, here's what we're going to do. Finish these sentences for me. I'll give you the STEM. You repeat the STEM and give me an ending. And do it as fast as you can. Don't overthink it. Don't calculate it. Just whatever comes out, comes out. And I said, fine. So he would say, here's the STEM. If I brought 5% more consciousness to my calling, finish that sentence. I'd make a list ahead of time of people I want to call. He said, keep going, repeat the STEM. Okay. If I brought 5% more consciousness to my calling, I'd breathe deeply before the call and relax into the call. Keep going. If I brought 5% more consciousness to my calling, I'd look for some books on how to be better on the phone. Keep going. If I brought 5% more consciousness to my calling, I would give him 10 endings. And we would record the session so I could listen to it later. And he also taught me and recommended that I do this on my own. Whenever there was anything in my life that I felt stuck with, I'm not good at this, I wish I was better, do the consciousness exercise. You know how to get better. It's all in you. And if you will do the consciousness exercise, if you will bring 5% more consciousness to this issue, you'll see things you couldn't see, and your mind will open 5%. Now, I've used this with clients. I've used it with groups. I've had whole groups who were studying something fill out on a page, if I brought 5% more consciousness to my, and then let's say we were meeting on customer relations or team building or sales or leadership. If I brought 5% more consciousness to how I lead my people, I would. And then they'd put 10 things down. Now, here's the brilliance of what Dr. Brandon was doing. Notice that he's not saying, if I change completely how I cold call, if I transform thoroughly how I cold call, because that's what people cannot do. Consciousness must be expanded a little bit at a time. And anyone can do this. Anyone can bring 5%, even things you're afraid to look at and afraid to understand. And that's always the problem. Can you do it 5%? Well, sure, 5%, of course. Anyone can expand their mind by 5% on any issue. There's 95% left that I'm not going to go to, so I'm comfortable. Now, that's the brilliance of it. That's why it's so brilliant. And because anyone and everyone will do it. Now, notice, if you do that every morning, if I bring 5% more consciousness to my relationship with my wife, if I bring 5% more consciousness to my job search, if you just did that for 3 weeks, you'd have a job. Not only a job, but a job you loved. I promise you this. People won't do it. They won't test it. But it works. And it shows you the role of consciousness. The more you understand, the more you can see what you see, the better you get at interacting with it. And pretty soon, it's no big deal. You can master it. You can be effective. You can be really good at that thing that used to scare you. And that's why it's so powerful. Consciousness has so much to do with wealth. Wealth is only a reflection. Wealth is a reflection of creativity and service. Who have I served? To what degree have I served them? Look in my bank account, that tells me. And because wealth is a reflection, and I can see it that way, and the road to wealth is creativity and service, there's nothing in there that feels creepy or greedy or materialistic. And the belief, the thought, that for me to become obsessed with ways to make money would make me materialistic and like I'd be one of those people that the media hates. And I don't want to be one of those people. I want to be a self-sacrificing, soul-based, saintly person who never thinks about money. Well, here's the problem with those people. They come to me because they're broke, and all they think about is money. All they think about is money. Whereas the person in their same profession who's really thriving financially, they don't think about money at all. They're thinking about who they can serve next. Isn't that ironic? That the people that I work with who are most obsessed, who put money on a pedestal, who bow down to money, for whom money is God, money is everything, are the people who don't have money. And the people who will tell you, it's not about the money, I don't care about money, I don't want to care about money, I'm afraid to care about money, I hate it that money exists, I don't want there to be any money. And they think about money all day long. But the people who've really learned how to serve and how to access the right side of their brain, their creativity, how to change their beliefs by authoring new beliefs, these people are the people who become wealthy and who really don't think about money. Because for them, it is not about the money after a while. The money's handled. It's about how can I be more creative and who can I serve? That's it. That's all there is.